WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. Layoffs at the Department of Education starting tonight. Some 1,300 federal employees sacked as the Trump administration works to fulfill its promise to dissolve the agency. North Carolina Democratic Congresswoman Alma Adams is on the House Education and Labor Committee.
It's an attack on our children, essentially, because they're the ones that really we rely on the Department of Education to protect and to provide what they need.
President Trump dialing back his latest tariff threat hours after making it today, upping the tariff on Canadian steel and aluminum to 50% before cutting it by half to 25%. That kicks in at midnight. Today, the House passing a stopgap bill to avert a government shutdown through September. That now heads to the Senate. Fresno, California, logging a confirmed measles case, but officials there say the risk to the general public remains low. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks in Indianapolis to take on the Pacers tonight. But the Bucks organization shocked and saddened at the news that Junior Bridgman has passed away. Bridgman played for the Bucks from 1975 to 1984, then later became a successful businessman, sitting on several boards of directors and growing his own business to over 100 restaurants, Wendy's and Chili's, many in southeastern Wisconsin. Last fall, Bridgman was included as a partner in the ownership of the Bucks.
10, 12 years ago, when there was rumors of the team possibly going to this city or that city, I said, that cannot happen. The people here deserve to have a team. They've supported a team even when those years when we weren't very good. They support them now. Why would you move the team from here?
Bridgman at an event today in his home city of Louisville, witnessing he grabbed his chest, saying he might be having a heart attack, rescuers unable to save him. Junior Bridgman was 71 years old. With Sports on Mike Clemens.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW Weekly Newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversation in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.fm today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversation. Sign up today at WGBW.fm/newsletter.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, but taking a little heat from folks who you're being mean to Democrats. And fully aware of that. Thank you. Appreciate you pointing that out, because I think Democrats should and must be better. If there's a future for working people in this country, it's going to be Democrats who are going to come around and fight for things that working people want. It's going to be Democrats that go out and actually listen to what working people have to say. We're going to get rid of some of the leadership that's been tone deaf for quite a while. We're going to actually get working class voices into these positions. That's my goal. That's my aim. Now, look. You haven't said bad things about Republicans. Really? You're going to argue that? Someone who says that has never listened to the program. Every bad idea that has harmed this country has come from a Republican think tank, especially in my lifetime. The Republican Party right now, in my lifetime, has been the party that has dreamt up virtually every bad idea that has harmed the working class. Attacks on labor, attacks on trade policy, attacks on tax code. You go down the list. It's emanated from them. Let's take NAFTA, because this is one of those things that I'm not quite sure how Democrats ate NAFTA. I know Bill Clinton signed it, but the majority of Democrats in the House and in the Senate voted against it. It was Republicans who carried the water, but Clinton put his name on it. Now, understand, NAFTA was birthed under Ronald Reagan. It was Reagan's baby. H.W. Bush fully negotiated it. And it became so ingrained in the politics of the day that Democrats had to come around. Because what was sold, and understand, the Republicans have always understood messaging, especially to working people. They understand talking to people, especially to working people, and sold them on this idea that, you know, if we expand trade, it'll mean more jobs. You know, if we open up Mexico, oh, that'll be a great market. And understand, it was never a good idea. The crazy little guy with the big ears was right. And, you know, as a younger person marching in the streets against this, it didn't make sense on how you're going to take a country that has a wage structure like Mexico has and open it up to a country like the U.S. who has a much higher wage structure and then expect Mexico to come up while us staying up. It was never going to be the idea. The idea is that it would bring us down, it would bring them up, and we would kind of level off. But even that hasn't happened. Because the people who gamed this out, the people who really understood what they were selling, knew it was all about crushing unions, crushing the ability for workers to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions, undoing the American dream and the standard of living that had been second to none throughout the world, and redistributing wealth to the handful of people at the very top who have been very, very, very happy to take it. I'll give you an example. The Forbes 400 had two billionaires, as I recall, at the time. In today's money, two billionaires. Fast forward to 2025. Now, that's 1982. Fast forward to today. None of those people in today's dollars of the wealth that they had been had back then would have made the Forbes 400 now. None of them. The moneyed interests have done so well that the wealthy of the past, well, not. I came across this article that pointed out that in 1988, there was one American on the top 15 wealthiest people list. One, media mogul Donald Newsom, or Newhouse. By 1989, you had two. You had Newhouse, the media mogul, and then you had the Walton guy. Sam was there. Then when Sam died, then a couple of the kids moved up. By 2024, of the top 15, only one is not an American. And you go, how's that possible? Now, look, I've joked for years that we should all have a favorite billionaire. We should all, you know, we should make trading cards of billionaires because we've created them. And look, through tax cuts, through deregulation, through bad free trade deals, through union busting, what we've done is we have redistributed the massive wealth from the American working class, one that built a major consuming powerhouse, and we've trickled it up. Because we're told, you know, we give the rich people all the tax cuts, rivers of gold and honey flowing down on us. Hasn't worked out, has it? And the thing is common sense on the tax front is one of those things where you go, just pure common sense, who's going to tell you, if you give rich people more money, they're not going to invest it in business or in creating jobs. They're going to save it. They're going to figure out how to use it to make more money for themselves. The only thing that creates jobs is demand. You give working people money, they're going to spend it. And rich people are going to figure out how to get that money from the working people. But in the process, there's some activity. And that's what grows an economy. So here we are now after these years of bad tax policy, bad trade policy, deregulation, union busting, where the American workforce is angry. Because now a large portion of us don't matter anymore in the consuming world because we don't have money to consume anymore. And the Elon Musks of the world, they understand that. So they know they can kick people while they're down because they're not going to react. They know they can fire people without any recourse. They know they can do that because they've been doing it for generations now. The question comes, when do we stop? So for all the people saying, oh, you're just bad-mouthing Democrats and you're making it worse. No, not my intention. My intention is to steal the spine of Democrats. Right now, while Donald Trump is talking about the potential recession coming, his recession, because he's pulling an enormous amount of demand out of the economy, maybe we should have Democrats putting forth pieces of legislation. No, they did. They came out with the PRO Act. Thrilled. Great. Where's the bill on minimum wage? Where's the bill to fix the maximum hour law bill? Where's that? Donald Trump's talking about ending overtime, but there's a twist. Where are the pieces of legislation that help working people? I've suggested that they should introduce the Dwight D. Eisenhower tax reform bill, where we return to a sane tax code that says, hey, 14 of the top 15 richest people in the world, time for you to pony up. Time for you to, if we're going to suffer, if we're going to have to tighten our belt, if this recession is going to cost people their homes and their jobs and their savings, how about you kick in a bit? Because what we used to do, it's how we got a 92% top marginal tax rate. World War II was coming. We needed to ramp up production. We need to get people to work. We needed money coming into the government. And where do you go? To the people who have it. The people who this economy has done such an amazing job for. Now, we're going to hear an awful lot, especially today, about tariffs and trade policy. For years, I've said, not afraid of tariffs. They're a tool in the toolbox, something we should be looking at. Not the answer. It's not the utopian a tool. It's not the be-all, end-all, but it is a tool. And like any tool, if you handle it properly, it does what it's supposed to. And if you don't, and this is where my fear is the guy who's wielding the tool today going to cause great damage. I used the saying that my grandfather the other day, any idiot with a hammer can tear down a house. It takes a skilled craftsman to build one. The sad reality is we've got an idiot who's got the hammer. Democrats, where are my skilled craftsmen? Where are my statesmen who are going to step forward and say, these are the policies we need to help the hurting working class? This is where we're going to get good-paying, family-sustaining wage jobs by investing in infrastructure and manufacturing. We're going to invest in American education and healthcare. And yes, Elon Musk and his crowd, the people who are right now, as we speak, running our government into the ground, they're going to be the ones who are going to help pick up the check. Instead of every time they run the car into the ditch, we, the working people, take it on the chin. We're the ones being rushed to the hospital with no health insurance. And, oh, by the way, you're going to go bankrupt because of how badly they drove the car. How about once, just once, let's try this, that maybe the working people don't get beaten up in the next recession, that maybe we go after the people who have continually won in recession. Donald Trump himself has said, loves it. You know, we get cheap property, go and buy things up pennies on the dollar. Also has to make you wonder if that is the plan. We collapse things just a little bit so we can go in and, well, pick up cheap. Add more to our billions. So for me, I want stronger Democrats. I want Democrats to find their spine. I want them to find their history and actually do the things that Democrats should be doing. And that's rolling up your sleeves, getting in there, and fighting the good fight for working people, much like Bernie Sanders is doing. Look, I give Bernie the utmost credit. He's out there going into red districts. He's out there holding rallies and opportunities to organize. Every Democrat should be adopting a Republican district and getting out there. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm not sure if you saw the op-ed in Friday's New York Times. Pennsylvania Congressman Chris DeLuzio has an op-ed in there that I think is really important on the tariff issue. Especially for Democrats who, you know, right now, because Trump has proposed them, they're running in the other direction. And as you've heard us talk about on this show for a very long time, tariffs are a tool. It's in the box. It's something that we use to get the outcomes we want. It's not the end all be all. It's not the savior. It's not the utopia we're being sold on the right. But it's also, it's not the demon that's we're hearing on the left. And here to share some thoughts on actually what it is and what could happen if we do go the tariff route. I've asked my good friend Scott Paul to come share some thoughts. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be with you.
So we hear that if we put tariffs on something, the prices are going to skyrocket and it's going to be the end of the economy. We hear this doomsday on a certain part of the segment. Is that accurate?
Not necessarily. No. In fact, you know, there's a lot of like unsettled academic thought about what happens when you apply a tariff. And the answer is no one really knows, you know, because part of it depends on the product and whether it's something called price elastic or price inelastic. And if you want to get into an economic seminar, I'm happy to do that. But it's like that's part of the equation. The other part of the equation is like, You're assuming that these importers are just like totally transactional and they're not going to change their behavior. And they often do change their behavior. The importers do. They renegotiate contracts with the folks they're sourcing from to get a better deal. That's one alternative. They find their product from a country that's not subject to the tariffs. That's another solution. And we know that happened a lot with kind of the first round of the China tariffs. In other cases, they might take a little bit of their profit margin and swallow it. And we know that that happened as well. And in still other cases, the value of the dollar adjusts in a way that offsets the import cost. The dollar gets a little stronger in the parlance. So it is not often the case that 100% of the cost gets passed on to the consumer. Let me give you a great example here, beer. All right, let's talk about beer. And you know, no one likes to complain about steel and aluminum tariffs more than either the soft drink makers or the beer makers. They're right. Like, this is gonna kill us, all right? And the amount of like aluminum, for instance, in a six pack is maybe 3 ounces, okay? 3 ounces of aluminum. And the grand total cost of that you know, is maybe 6 or 7 cents. Okay. And so if you're raising that by 25% maximum, you're passing all of that on, that's going to rise up to 8 cents. All right. So when they say the price of your beer is going to double, it's going to double because they're trying to gouge you. It's not because of the steel or aluminum tariffs. And same things when it applies to automobiles, right? I mean, you hear 25% and you're like, oh, wow, that's going to be a lot. But if you look at it, like the steel and aluminum components in automobiles are a tiny fraction of the selling cost of that automobile. So this is about math. It's about economics. It's about actually listening to, and this is the part that's aggravating to me, particularly, I will say, when Democrats say this, okay? They cite, like, the Chamber of Commerce or, like, you know, free trade think tanks like the Cato Institute or the Tax Foundation, who disagree with them on everything else, on absolutely everything else, but they're like, this must be the gospel.
And this is, I want to stop you because, you know, I'm getting a lot of blowback because everyone accuses me of beating up on Democrats. And I'm saying, well, I want better Democrats. And I think we need better Democrats. We need better Republicans, too, because they're horrible. Yeah. But, you know, it's this neoliberal Democrat that I'm trying to get rid of and have been for the 20 years I've been doing this show. Our bad trade policies, our bad tax policies. You go down the list of all of the bad deregulation policies that have been brought to us by neoliberal Democrats. And I argue, as I did a minute ago, that this is the reason we're in the mess that we're in, is because Democrats went along with Republicans on really bad ideas for working people, but really good ones for the rich people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is part of the untold story. And this is like, you know, I guess the flip side of the coin is Republicans were complicit in all of that.
Absolutely. Right?
You know, 100%. I mean, 100% complicit. The problem was you had, you know, the Democratic president, Bill Clinton, and then you had enough Democrats in the Senate and the House, and actually wasn't even a majority, wasn't even close to a majority of the Democrats that supported like NAFTA or bringing China into the World Trade Organization and cutting tariffs on China permanently. And, you know, it was actually the, like in Chris DeLuzio, and I'm glad that you mentioned that op-ed, it's actually people like him who led the opposition. I know, because I was there. That's where I was in the 1990s, working in the House of Representatives for, you know, Democrats who supported working people and who said NAFTA was a terrible idea, Fast Track Trade Authority, terrible idea, bringing China into the World Trade Organization, bad idea. And honestly, you know, allowing for the financialization of the economy through the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which, you know, opened up financial services into a big casino, also bad. All of these policies bad, all of them neoliberal. They are all turned out to be wrong. And so this is the thing that gets me. It's like, all right, you know, free trade for 30 years didn't help. It didn't help workers. And on net, do consumers seem a lot better off? Yes, everybody has a choice of, like, you know, 50 cheap t-shirts now instead of like 3 that they had before. So I guess you have an abundance of choice, but you're very constrained by your wages, right? Because wages haven't been rising fast at all. And that's why people feel poorer. Yep. As consumers, right? It's not because of a lack of free trade. It's because of too much free trade and the depression of the wages. And it's like, let's treat people as workers and let's lift them up and let's pay them more and let's get them into occupations where you can earn more money. I think that's the solution. It's certainly not like, you know, let's go back to free trade and not think about tariffs.
Right. And just so I'm clear to folks who are angry at me, Republicans birthed the NAFTA. It was birthed under Ronald Reagan, fully negotiated under H.W. Bush. Clinton signed it, put some lipstick on the pig with some labor, some weak labor and environmental rules in there. But still, Democrats got saddled with it because Republicans have a much better messaging machine and a much bigger echo chamber that they laid this at the feet of Democrats. And this is where I want better Democrats who are going to stand up and fight back and say, no, it wasn't all of us. It was these corporate Democrats who we need to get rid of to bring in working class folks. I know you're not coming along with me on this, but at the end of the day, we need stronger, backboned working class Democrats or Republicans. I don't care. But get me some people who care about average, about people like me, Scott. That's what that's what I want.
Yeah. Look, I am totally with you. And I guess I see, you know, I'm optimistic because you have a guy like Chris DeLuzio stand up and say something. And I know some of these folks are polarizing now, but like Jared Golden was like, I'm for tariffs, right? He's from Maine. And I know, you know, he's like kind of a more conservative Democrat, but he feels the trade stuff. Tom Suozzi from Long Island, you know, is like Democratic, joined with a Republican from Michigan to co-sponsor a bill to get rid of permanent normal trade relations for China. You know, toss it out. He thought that was a good idea. I totally agree. And then, you know, there and again with those Republicans who are supporting those policies to stop the free trade stuff, I'm with that too. Like I'm for it. I don't care the party label. You know, I want a better policy, but I do think it's important for Democrats to remember where they came from on this. And that was fighting these policies in the first place. And, you know, rather than like trying to sound much more like the Chamber of Commerce or some economics professor who, you know, resides in theory rather than the real world, you know, get back to your roots, you know, go to the factory towns, talk to the people and treat them as workers first. Yeah. And again, and if corporations say, you know what, we're going to raise our prices for tariffs, they should ask them, did you ever lower them? No, you didn't. You know, you're taking profits, so eat it.
Exactly. It's the question I ask at the grocery store every time they want to push me into the self-checkout line. Am I getting a discount for this? I'm doing somebody's work. Do I get something? And this is the same kind of thing. I mean, you know, we as consumers have power. And what's amazing to me is it's almost like the American consumer doesn't realize their power because everyone complains about the price of eggs. You know how you bring down the price of eggs? You don't buy them. Enough of them sit long enough, they build up and you go, hey, we got to get rid of these eggs. You know what happens? Price comes down.
Yeah. Yeah. And my hope is that, you know, we'll find some alignment on all of that. But, you know, really, you know, accusing Trump, and he may be a lot of things, I'm going to say, but I think that at some level he understands that the China and the NAFTA didn't work. Now, I don't know how things are going to end up, but I know the answer is not to keep on doing the same thing.
Right. No, absolutely.
It's not to keep on doing the same thing. And Democrats should recognize too, like Biden, he put 100% tariff on Chinese vehicles, 100%. So, you know, it's like, you know, Trump has a ways to go to catch up with what Joe is doing.
I've said before, I don't want to see him fail because if he fails, we all fail. I just don't have any faith in him because I've seen what he's done in the past and I'm seeing what he's doing now. There doesn't seem to be any coherent strategy. There doesn't seem to be any end game. And now you got him talking potential recession. You got Doge Boy saying we're going to have to feel some pain. We're in an interesting moment.
We are indeed. And yeah, I don't know what the strategy is. I think that's fair to say, or exactly how it's going to turn out. But I do believe that certainly from a Democratic perspective, the lawmakers, instead of just, you know, throwing darts at everything that he does, what's your plan? You know, and part of it has to be tariffs. It has to be. It can't be to go back to, things are fine with China, things are fine with Mexico, because they're not.
Yeah, no,
they're not okay.
Last, I want to get your thoughts, because I have a bunch of my red hat friends going, you know, Honda just announced that they're going to make the Civic at a plant they have in Indiana and not build a new one in Mexico because of these tariffs, or at least that's the messaging. I'm not buying it, but I wanted to get your thoughts.
Look, I want to see that happen in a real way. I do. And, you know, the problem is a lot of these announcements seem to be kind of like pre-staged, and I that might have even jumped the gun on that one. But we'll know from the data too, Rick. I mean, that's the most important thing. Are we getting more manufacturing jobs here? Are you seeing more factories going up? Is the trade deficit with those countries getting smaller, right? I mean, those, I think, are the keys to me. and not a flashy announcement about this or that, right? We need to make this a trend rather than an anecdote.
I'm right there with you. You know, at the end of this, we need more Chris DeLuzios and people out there fighting for working folks. And we need Democrats to come home to the FDR roots, come home to, well, you know, the blue collar world that they came from. Just my Amen. Thoughts, obviously. But Scott, this week going forward, clearly last week was an interesting week of there are tariffs, there aren't tariffs, there are, there maybe, they're not. are we expecting fun and entertainment from
cut
now?
Cut and paste. Because, cut and paste.
Because evidently April 2nd is a big day, right?
Well, and this week is a big week too for steel and aluminum. So we'll see what happens on that. And then April 2nd is the reciprocal tariff. So yeah. So we got a couple more rounds of this, Rick. I don't know if we'll be left standing or not. So yeah.
Yeah. Heads are spinning. But Scott, as always, I appreciate the time, the expertise, good stuff.
All right, Rick, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Want to hear your thoughts. When do we stop buying eggs, I guess, is the question. Or will we? Back after this.
From De Pere to Suamico, 97.9 WGBW. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low in the upper 20s. For tomorrow, sunshine returns and warmer, highs to the low 50s. And into the upper 50s and partly to mostly sunny Thursday. Mid-60s Friday with showers and storms late and breezy. Right now, it's 31.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Tom from Monona. I love this one. He says, this is Tom. I like to rub my feet together and drink milk out of the cow. Listen, we'd all spoon ourselves if we could, just for some affection. But rubbing your feet together, as I mentioned last week, is the closest thing to self-cuddling. It's just a relaxing, and Tom wants to do that, apparently laying under the udder of a cow. That is the idea of a chill evening on Fat Tuesday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last Friday, Pennsylvania Representative Chris DeLuzio had an op-ed over at the New York Times, which, you know, Chris has been on the show a number of times. I wish we had more Chris DeLuzios in Congress. Talking about tariffs. And saying, hey, you know, maybe, here's an idea, maybe we don't get into this anti-tariff absolutism. Maybe we don't immediately reject it. Maybe we look for a smart way to use them. And the sad reality is tariffs have become another one of those red hat, blue hat issues. Where if your group's for it, my group has to be against it, regardless if it works or not. And all in, all out, sorry, not helpful. Tariffs are a tool, like a hammer in a toolbox. It's useful. It's not your only tool. And here to share some thoughts on what Representative DeLuzio is proposing and where we go on the tariff issue and maybe the education that we need to be having. I've asked my good friend Lori Wallach to share some thoughts with us. Lori is the director of Rethink Trade, rethinktrade.org, the website. Lori, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for inviting me back.
So do you agree with me that this has turned into this kind of red hat, blue hat, where the red hats are all in? It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And my blue hat friends are, no, it's the end of the economy. It's going to cause a depression, where we have these polar opposites and there's nothing in the sanity realm.
Well, what's particularly perverse about that, which is an accurate description, is that President Biden, big old D after his name, actually raised tariffs above what the Trump administration had put in place. He left a bunch of those in place, but he did, you know, he raised from 15% to 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs and certain solar equipment and various steel and aluminum products went way up because he realized, a Democrat, you need to stop unfair imports that can hurt U.S. producers and workers. And that's a really important use of tariffs. So it's not so much, ironically, that Democrats haven't used this tool, but But just like you're describing, because right now Trump is the guy using the tool, the Democrats' messaging is, oh, this must be bad. When in fact, it's a tool Democratic and Republican presidents have used it for a very long time. A bunch of them, you know, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama went away from the tradition of protecting U.S. workers and producers against unfair cheating trade. And look at the hell we got for working Americans. And now on a bipartisan basis, Trump, Biden, Trump, we're back to using the tool. And the Democrats' messaging does not reflect that reality in large part.
Yeah, but here's my problem. My problem is it's who's wielding the tool. You can give me the tool and I can use it in a certain way. You can give a two-year-old the tool and he'll smash things, especially when you're talking about hammers. My problem is that this tool becomes so badly misused that we don't use it in the future because it does cause all of the problems that my friends on the left think it's going to. And it makes it, you know, just something that is toxic on the right that even they won't touch it. So for me, I fear that they so badly misuse this that it becomes the one tool we don't use in the future again.
That worries me a lot as well. I mean, here's the thing about tariffs. There are many different ways you can use tariffs, but if you're trying to use them to try and incentivize rebuilding domestic production, which we need to, then you have to put them in place and leave them there so that investors know, hey, this is the new condition. I'm going to build a new factory in the U.S. because there are going to be tariffs now. And I know there'll be demand because the unfair imports are going to be kept out. And I know I will get a return on my investment because this is the new reality for the next five, whatever years. The problem is if you have tariffs 1 second, get rid of them 4 days later, threaten them again, the investors are not reaching for their checkbooks.
Right.
A tariff roller coaster like leads them to like reach for their barf bags and run for the exits. You are not going to get the investment. You're not going to get the jobs. Contrast this with using tariffs that were in place, not going anyplace, and accompanied by the other policies you need to make sure that protection delivers for workers and consumers, not just goes into bigger profits. And you'll see that the Biden administration didn't use it enough, could have done more, but my goodness, they did a great job with things like the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act, so that by 2023, we had the highest rate of investment in construction of new American factories in 30 years. In 30 years. So you can see how you can do it right. And now I'm very worried, like you, that the erratic, unplanned, you know, kind of loopy way that Trump is using tariffs is going to give the whole concept a bad name. Yet there are only two or three tools that can be used to correct our huge, chronic, unsustainable, deindustrializing, income inequality raising trade deficit. We must do something about it. And there are three tools that can do it. And we cannot throw away tariffs. That's one of them.
Yeah. No, but what you don't understand, this is what my red hat friends will tell me, you don't understand is Donald Trump is a chess master. He's 10 moves ahead of everyone else. This is all part of the great plan. We're gonna replace income tax with tariffs. It's going to be great. You just don't understand, Lori.
So just on the income tax thing, the level of tariffs you would have to replace income tax with tariffs is such that even though I'm a fan of the strategic use of tariffs, I would be against that because you would basically, it would be a misuse of the tariff. The folks who think about that, think about when tariffs were the main source of revenue for the U.S. government. But the difference was that's when we didn't really have a full developed government. There was no Social Security. There was no Medicare and Medicaid. We didn't have the federal government doing many of the things our families rely on now. It basically paid for a military. I mean, there was no interstate highway system. There was just none of the stuff of a modern government. So yeah, because the costs of the government were minuscule, then tariffs could cover that.
See, but here's the thing, if I could stop you quick, that's what they want. You just laid out the plan for a lot of my red hat friends. They don't want the government doing anything. They want nothing, well, until it's them, but they want nothing for other people. And
But here's the piece of that. And I keep like, I have like in the back of my head, like, how long is it going to take before people who say things like that ideologically and sort of spout out those kind of slogans have their VA diabetes supplies suddenly not there when they need them because the person got sacked who was the procurement officer for their region to get everyone who served their country and deserves medical care the drugs that they need, or the doctor at the VA or the nurse at the VA? Who's going to say that when suddenly their own kids' after school program is canceled and they're up a creek because there's no one to take care of the kids between school and when they get home from work? Who's going to say that when the grandma can't get Medicaid and is going to be like having to live on the couch because they have no ability to stay in the nursing home that Medicaid's now covering for them to make sure that they're safe and taken good care of? Who's going to say that when actually you want to go camping this summer and the damn national park is closed down or there's garbage every place, the toilets are disgusting because all those folks got sacked? Once it hits people's quality of life, the things that they don't think about that taxes and the government make our quality of life safe, that's when they're going to start rethinking that idea.
Or even more close to home, when you know people get laid off because their job was dependent on a government contract, because you know government spending, government procurement is a large portion of our consumer economy. And if you no longer have that large driver, the number of jobs, and this is what Mark Cuban's concerned about. He said, you know, the policies that we're seeing out here, you know, could lead us straight into recession, because when you pull that kind of resource out of the economy, that kind of spending out of the economy, there is a very negative trickle down effect.
That's right. I mean, here is the sort of ironic thing. There are people around Trump who actually have a vision of how you could strategically use tariffs in a way that would basically transition our government and our system of trade into a more pro-worker, pro-production. Let me take that back. Not pro-worker, pro-production framework. But then the things you need to make sure it's pro-worker, pro-consumer, all the Republicans are against.
Right.
So like,
right.
Here's just the example. Let's say you put up a bunch of tariffs because, you know, if you think about what the tariffs are useful for, and this is what Congressman DeLuzio's op-ed pointed out, you've got two different categories of use. You've got countries that are, you know, what are called mercantile countries. They use what are called beggar thy neighbor policies.
That'd be China.
Things like they have really, really enormous subsidies. It's not like here's a demand subsidy through a tax credit to get more people to buy American-made EVs. No, it is the government gives you the land free and they build the factory for you and they provide you free electricity and water and they transport your goods to the harbor and the government subsidized shipping company brings them to the U.S. And there's no way possibly a market running factory can compete with that. And they bring down the value of their currency. Because, you know, the currency the good is traded in when converted to the other currency, if the currency that's traded in is artificially low, it makes the product cheap, even if you actually put the full value of the costs and the inputs into it. Or they suppress wages. If it's China, Vietnam, a bunch of these chronic mercantile countries, they just literally say, like, that's it. Independent union, you go to jail. This is the wage. If you don't like it, you go to jail. And all of those things combined mean there are a handful of countries around the world that have enormous chronic trade surpluses, and that's their jam. And it's, you know, it's the countries you expect. So it's Japan, it's Korea, it's China, it's Vietnam. But then there's some you don't expect, like Germany and the Netherlands, who basically, because they're trading in the euro, have a subsidy on the currency. If they were trading in their old original currency, it would be a much stronger, higher value currency. So they have huge trade surpluses every year with the whole world. And then there are chronic deficit countries. The only way you stop that is you either bring down the value of the dollar, you put up tariffs, or you limit the inflow of investment coming to the US. And just practically, the tool that is most readily available is the tariff. So then you've got the problems of bilateral deficits like Mexico. And there you try and fix the rules, bring up wages in Mexico, stop the cheating of China using that as an export platform for duty-free access into the U.S. for Chinese stuff that they like screw in the last pieces in Mexico and try and slip it through. That's a different set of problems. Tariffs are what you use at the end, if everything else doesn't work, you try and fix the rules of trade so that bad stuff can't come in. If you think about trying to fix any of that without tariffs, you are SOL.
Yeah,
it's
no,
not going to work.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, you know, some people would say, but Lori, you sound like a protectionist. And I say, look, I am a protectionist. I'm not an isolationist. I think we have to deal with the rest of the world. But when I leave my house, I lock the door. I don't have a giant moat around it. So I think we as a country have to start thinking in those terms of, we do need to protect strategic industries. We do need to have steel and aluminum and manufacturing. We need to bring those things back, because for far too long, we've allowed corporate America to go follow the cheap exploitable labor, the lax environmental regulations, and then make themselves extraordinarily rich at the cost of the working people of this country and the consumers. This, the fact that you know, the Trump supporters, the red hats, are all in on tariffs, tells me that things are pretty bad in the heartland, and well, folks need to wake up.
I was going to say, here's the thing, though. This is the problem where I was going. If you put up the tariffs the way I described, you fix that trade problem. But if you don't have accompanying policies, most of right. which the Republicans in Congress and Trump and Elon Musk and all those guys are against, you're not going to have workers and consumers benefit. You're going to have bigger profits for the boss. And those are things like, if you want the protection of keeping out some of the foreign goods to actually help workers, you have to get unionization rates up so that those increased profits and the increased sales of U.S. goods in the U.S. turn into higher wages. Otherwise, it's just going to, and you have to ban stock buybacks. Otherwise, it's just going to be, you know, basically people getting, the investors getting a bigger return and bigger dividends, et cetera. So yes, you would have protection for targeted industries that you know you need. And by the way, this is like an important security issue, both national security, but just resilience. I mean, did we not learn our lesson from COVID and or from various natural disasters that we can't just have one supply chain for things like key transportation goods and medicines and communication stuff? We need to actually have more competition, which gets to point two. For consumers not to pay by having higher prices because the protected industries that are more monopolistic and can raise more prices, we need to have stronger competition policies. The last time the U.S. had across-the-board tariffs was Nixon in 1971, and he imposed price controls.
Right.
Not anti-gouging rules, not stronger competition enforcement, price controls that said you may only charge this much for a dozen eggs, Mr. Grocery Store. So if we want the use of tariffs, again, a tool to work for all of us, we need higher unionization rates, no stock buybacks, strong competition policy so prices don't go up. Plus, we need all the rest of the industrial policy tools. Like you said, it's a tool, it's a hammer, but you also need the screwdriver and you need the level and you need the saw and you need the miter and you need all this stuff basically to be able to build a house. So we also need the investment in the areas of industrialization we want to rebuild. We need training and support for apprenticeships. We need tax policies that incentivize demand, that create domestic demand. Hey, you get a tax credit if you buy a blah, blah, American-made blah, blah versus a foreign one. You get a bigger tax credit. All of that stuff together, we need Buy America policies to have all its loopholes closed so that the U.S. government, with its trillions of dollars of demand, ends up demanding U.S.-made goods so that people know you can invest here and make sure you can sell it and make money. Yeah. That package and that vision, whether it is run by a Democrat or a Republican, would do the thing. The problem is the Republicans oppose all the things you need to accompany it. And the Democrats lately, because Trump is doing the tariffs, have been squeamish about the tariff part. And this is why we really, really need to rethink also politically how this sounds to working people. Because if we want to have Democrats doing this the right way with the unionization rules and the competition policy that, you know, that Republicans aren't that into, then we need to actually change the politics of what working people think of which party. Right now, they think the Republicans are their friends and the Democrats are out to get them. And the way Democrats are talking about tariffs, and this was Congressman DeLuzio's point, it kind of sounds like that.
No, we've ceded it to them. You know, just like freedom and liberty, they've given those words over. But, you know, as you were talking, it reminded me of something my grandfather always said. You know, he said, any idiot with a hammer can tear down a house. It takes a skilled craftsman to build one. And this seems like that kind of frame. We've given the idiot the tool, and I fear he's going to tear down the house, where what we need are people who are skilled in doing all the things that you said, maybe next election. So last question I've got for you. Do you think Representative DeLuzio's op-ed, do you think this vein of thought will take hold in the Democratic Party? Do we think there'll be some bit of sanity to get away from this absolutism that we've found ourselves in? Do you think this helps?
So here's what's super interesting. I've been in the trade debate for over 30 years, since before NAFTA and WTO even existed. And it's always been the Democrats in Congress who are the ones, to the extent anyone is, who's fighting back against boneheaded, job-killing trade agreements. And so, you know, it was the Democrats who fought against Bill Clinton, their own president, to try and stop NAFTA. It was the Democrats who fought against TPP, their own president, Obama, and stopped it. Saved us from it. And, you know, that couldn't get through Congress. That was because there was a huge block of Democratic House votes that just weren't going to have it. And so by the time President Trump won, came in and said, I'm getting out of it, it's basically because for a year and a half, Obama couldn't pass it. Yeah. It would have been enacted otherwise. So now you've got this very strong revulsion of and reasonable. I want to like sign up for that revulsion. I am part of that revulsion of all these things that Trump is doing. And because he's also doing smart things potentially, or at least not doing smart things, thinking about doing smart things, but then can't help himself by screwing it all up on trade and wants to use the tool of tariffs, it's tainting it. And so I think what DeLuzio's call was to basically say, hey, this guy is screwing up how tariffs are used. He is not going to fix the problem. But friends, if we sound like we're just against tariffs, it's like giving the middle finger to the working class and letting Trump own this lane. And he's not responsibly using this tool. I mean, you know, just to summarize for folks what the actual hell happened last week, in the course of one four-day period, Monday, they announced tariffs, 25% on Mexico and Canada, except for 10% on Canadian crude oil imports, another 10% on China, in addition to the 10% that they put into China on February. That was on Monday. They went into effect at midnight, beginning of Tuesday. And Trump announced, when he announced it, no exclusions, no exceptions. And there weren't. On Tuesday, Wednesday morning shows up and Trump says, well, you know, maybe we're just going to exclude cars and auto parts from the tariffs with Mexico. You know, that's probably the best thing to do. Ruh-roh. That's like, I don't know, 60% of NAFTA trade. Then Thursday dawns. Well, you know, maybe we should do all the things that comply with the USMCA, the NAFTA 2.0 rules for Mexico. I think we'll do that. 45 minutes later. And then we're going to do the same thing for China.
Yeah. No.
Plus, already he had gotten rid of the beginning of the closing of the de minimis loophole, which is the thing you have to fix to make the China tariffs work. You know, he had said, hey, we're not going to have any more of this duty free for small packages, 4 million packages a day. All these tariffs get cheated on for $40 billion of stuff a year. Plus, fentanyl slips in because like drug traffickers are like, oh, shit. 4 million packages a day. There's no damn way anyone's inspecting my stuff. So, you know, here come 3 million t-shirts and like, you know, 300 packages of fentanyl laced fake knockoff, pretending that there's some kind of painkiller pills, and that's killing people. That loophole had to be closed to make the China tariffs work. So here we have this announcement in the beginning of February about this whole like Lollapalooza of tariffs, that their impact is so limited because of all these like two steps, take backs, undos. And now they're saying on April 2nd, this is a suspension until April 2nd, and they're going to announce a reciprocal tariff plan. Now, I would say we should all stay tuned to see if they actually have a plan, because up until now, they have had no plan. And as a result, they're actually giving the tool of tariffs a bad damn name.
And that's my fear. Lori, I appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Keep up the great work there at Rethink Trade, rethinktrade.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that Lori does. Thanks so much, Lori.
Thank you.
I got to take a quick break. Want to hear your thoughts. Are we on the right track? Did we give the idiot the tool? Is he going to tear down the house? Your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. This is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1950. That was the day the Red Scare took its toll on the U.S. labor movement. The Congress of Industrial Organizations expelled the International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers for their alleged communist ties. Although small in numbers, communist organizers had played an important role in building the large industrial unions that were the core of the CIO. During the CIO's 1949 convention, this anti-communist hysteria was on full display. There, the CIO delegates decided to bar any individual with communist affiliations from serving as union officers. Their panic did not stop there, as the CIO leadership also voted to revoke the charters of unions they deemed too closely aligned with the communists. Immediately, the convention threw out the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers. During the 1950s, more unions were caught up in the purge, including the International Union of Longshoremen and Warehousemen. In all, the anti-communist frenzy saw 11 unions ousted from the House of Labor. According to a report to Congress by the Department of Labor, the cause of these expulsions was that the union's, quote, espousal of Soviet Russia became increasingly distasteful to the CIO leadership and rank-and-file membership. Cold War fear-mongering had effectively isolated the most left-leaning unions in the country. The impact on the labor movement was long-lasting. After the purge, unions took a much more moderate stance on things like civil rights. This hampered their organizing efforts in the South. To this day, there is less union representation in southern states. It also pushed the CIO closer to the Democratic Party and paved the way for the CIO's reunification with the more politically moderate American Federation of Labor.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I tell you, I really like Lori Wallach. I think the work that she's done over the years, and I've known her for, well, got to be almost 20 years now. She has been on the right side of the trade issue as long as I've known her. And look, the DeLuzio piece is important because it's one of those things where you've got to tell Democrats, hey, the tool that Trump is using, I would argue misusing, is not one that we should be throwing out. We should keep it in the toolbox. It's something that's useful. It's something that we need if we're going to rebalance trade, if we're going to reshore manufacturing, if we're going to recreate that American dream. The fact that Trump has taken this, the fact that Republicans again have taken on to something and gone 100% all in, it is the end all be all. And that Democrats haven't said, whoa, 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 hold on. It's like the words freedom and liberty and patriotism all over again. Tariffs are important, but they're not going to solve all of our problems. And when Trump screws this up, and I fear that he will, look, I hope we rebalance trade. I hope he does well. I want him to do well, because if he does, then that means there are going to be, you know, thousands, if not millions of people in this country whose lives are going to get better. And I can't root against that. I won't root against that. My fear, however, is that there's no plan. There's no idea of how to fix the problems that bipartisan Republicans and Democrats have caused over the last 40 years. I fear it doesn't get fixed, and that we allow tariffs to be another one of those things that then become, no, we tried that, can't touch that again, which would make corporate America very, very happy, because, you know, the upper ups, you know, the rich folk at the top, the ones who are lining their pockets, they're thrilled the way things are right now. And for me, I hope Democrats, you know, hold Trump to the fire and push for something that's going to actually help working people. Like Lori said, stronger unions, you know, better community spending, investment here at home, that kind of stuff. Want to hear your thoughts. Do you agree, disagree? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Trump threatened to double his planned tariffs on steel and aluminum from 25 to 50% for Canada. That led to the government of Ontario suspending its surcharges on electricity sold to the U.S., so the White House pulled back to just 25%. And those tariffs begin at midnight tonight. Nearly half of everyone who works at the Department of Education laid off tonight. Over 1,300 people, part of the Trump administration's plan to ultimately do away with that agency. House Republicans tonight passing a stopgap bill to fund the government through September. The spending bill now heads to the Senate. After 8 hours of talks in Saudi Arabia, a potential breakthrough, Ukraine agreeing to a U.S. plan for an immediate 30-day ceasefire with Russia. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio now saying the ball's in Russia's court. Major change after that mid-air collision near Reagan National Airport. The NTSB urging a ban on all helicopters in the area. This is ABC News. 5 years